Blog Talk Radio.
David Duenes, I'm your co-host Steve Canine Kim, and joining me as always from the picturesque city of San Francisco, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. How are you? How was your weekend?
I'm doing okay, despite what was a horrendous defensive performance by my beloved Miami Hurricanes. I was actually at the game in Lincoln, Nebraska. It was a great trip. Outside of the fact that the Hurricanes lost and they're now 2-2, but as we move forward, Gabe, we want to let everybody know, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question via Twitter, you could do so at Gabriel_Montoya or at Steve UCN Live. Gabe, let's be very honest about it right now. What's going on in boxing? Honestly, not all that much.
No, it's a little grim. You know, we did get some good action this last weekend. Just got to bless Orlando Salido for helping us through this little drought here. But yeah, there's not a lot on the horizon. I mean, there's stuff kind of happening here and there, but nothing to really sink your teeth into. But we'll forge ahead anyway and see what we can do.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get started with round number one from Tijuana, Mexico, on BN Sports for the interim WBO junior lightweight title. Orlando Salido gets off the canvas multiple times in what is a fight of the year candidate for 2014. Stops the game tough Ty Terzakolkiet, Jim, in 11 thrilling rounds. Gabe, all I could say is one thing. Thank you, Mikey Garcia.
Yeah, seriously, there's actually been some good fights coming off of him. You know, a lot of people complain that he doesn't really bring the action, as fast or as often as people would like. But since he's been out, we've been getting a lot of action. This fight was it was kind of hard to watch on some level because both guys, they're action oriented. They both have real power. They're just experienced veterans, but you get the sense that their punch resistance is going away rapidly. There were times where Salido would just be opening up and pushing Kokia Jim back, and then one little sweeping shot, and boom, he'd hit the canvas. But he didn't seem like he was hurt so much as just kind of caught off guard, or just his ability to handle certain punches has just gone away. But hell of a fight. I mean, just what a war it was.
Starting with his supposed tune-up against Wang Haya, which I believe was December of 2011, which was the interim fight in between his two bouts with Juan Ma Lopez, he shockingly hit the canvas, I believe, twice and was nearly knocked out in what was a 50-1 fight. From that point on, I think in his last 6-7 fights, Gabe, Orlando Salido, who I still think is one of the consummate tough guys in all of boxing, I think he's hit the canvas at least 10 times. There's no doubt about it, the punch resistance is eroding and fading fast. And there were punches there where he was rolling, going downhill on him, and a left hand would come out of nowhere that would thwack him. And I don't think he ever saw the punches coming. And do I still think Orlando Salido has skills? Absolutely. But do I think he's getting up on the very short end of the stick in terms of what's left in that gas tank? There's no doubt about it. But Kokia Jim, to me, is right up his alley in a sense that he's not hard to find. He's going to stand right in front of you, and he's going to trade. But Orlando Salido, to me, he's one of my favorite fighters. And like a Glenn Johnson, Gabe, he may not make the Hall of Fame. He may not be known historically. And I don't know if the casuals will ever really appreciate him. But Orlando Salido, like I called him today in my column, Gabe, he truly is a fighter's fighter.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, he just – the thing with him, though, what I wonder about and I worry about – he's just not really avoiding a lot of shots. He still is able to kind of parry things, catch things with his gloves. And I think he kind of gets it, that he really has to put it on you and put it on you kind of fast. Even though the fight went the distance, I mean, he put a lot of damage on Kokia Jim to that body right from, you know, about 30 seconds, 40 seconds in. Anytime he'd get close, he would just – he put everything into the combinations, too. There's no kind of off-speed pitch with him. Everything seems to be thrown, you know, with the baddest intentions. My question is, where does he go from here? I mean, you know, he's being matched with Kokia Jim to kind of keep him going. You know, he's kind of not the most spring chicken itself. Can you put Orlando Salido back in with a top-level guy that's young and fresh, or is that just kind of a death sentence?
Gabe, I asked Sean Gibbons of Zanford Promotions, who works very closely with Siri Salido, what's next. Now, he won the interim WBO title because it was made open and possible because of the absence of Mikey Garcia, who holds this title. Now, quite frankly, at this stage of his career, if he fought Mikey Garcia 10 times, he probably wins maybe once if he's lucky. Because if you look at the reflexes, the quickness, the ability to see punches, and reaction time, those things all sway from the young man from Riverside, California, who hails from Oxnard, Mikey Garcia. What I'm being told by other sources, Mikey Garcia is not in a rush to fight anytime soon. In fact, he may be the Mexican-American version of Andre Ward. So, Gabe, that may not even be a problem. Here's what I think this belt did for Orlando Salido. It ensures that in 2015, as he heads towards the sunset of his career, that he's going to head out with at least one or two more six-figure paydays because, let's be honest, we're not the ones taking the punches. He's willingly doing it. And 130 is not the deepest division. I've said this for years now, it seems. There is no Marco Antonio Barrera. There is no Eric Morales. There is no Juan Manuel Marquez. And I don't know if he's willing to go to Asia and take on some of those very good Japanese fighters at 130. But anytime Salido fights, Gabe, and you talk about the art of fighting, the craft of being a slippery, tricky, dirty guy who makes it somewhat entertaining in all facets, I don't think there's any doubt that Orlando Salido, in many respects, is must-see TV. But I think they also have to be very careful in terms of who actually does get to see him fight.
Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Gabe, I don't know when I got dropped off here. And first of all, excuse me for that. Gabe, I think what this victory does with that interim belt is it gives him an opportunity to cash out and to really parlay what's been a very hard, difficult career. And I don't know if you guys caught this part, but I'm being told Mikey Garcia is in no rush to box. So even with this interim title, where he has an enforcement where he might be able to get a Mikey Garcia rematch, number one, I'm not so sure that's the right fight for him. And number two, I'm not even so sure Mikey Garcia will be back in the ring by that point in time. So I'm not so sure what they're going to do. Sean Gibbons says he's going to tell me later what their plans are. But Orlando Salido, to me, I know he had that drug test, and that's a black mark on him. But I'll say this. I think he's the consummate fighter, and he's the type of guy, as a follower and a fan of the sport, that we should all definitely appreciate. I mean, think about it, Gabe. He turned pro at age 15 years old, which means throughout his life, he's 33 now, there's been more years of his life where he's been a fighter than not. Just think about that.
That's kind of what I was thinking when I was watching him. It's just, you wonder, you know, like guys like this, or like, you know, an Antonio Margarito, when they start to slow down, I mean, it's just, this will all the way down. Everything just starts falling off. And watching him just keep getting knocked down. And what was strange about the knockdowns is he didn't seem terribly wobbled. There was I think, early on one of them where he seemed to be kind of gathering himself, but he didn't look terrible. It was just he would get hit with a particular shot and just his legs would go out. And you start to wonder about those short circuits. I mean, I love the guy. I love watching him fight. I love his story. You know, the drug thing was a long time in the past. He even had it looked into. We've talked extensively about it on Leave It in the Ring with him. So I think you got to deal with the guy's present. And present, he's a guy that just shows up to work, punches a clock, and is always ready to go. I do wonder a little bit about his health. And I also kind of wonder, you know, where exactly is he? Because Kokia Jim is not exactly a young guy. So is it a mirage, and is he completely falling apart? but he needs to be, he can be matched well, or has he still got something left to give? I'd like to see it.
You know, there's a man by the name of McAfee, who I know me and you have both worked mitts with, and one of the wise old men of boxing that you go to the gym, and maybe the general public doesn't know who he is, and but you learn so much from guys like this. And he's told me for years, Stevie, the first thing on a fighter to leave are his legs. Once the legs are gone, everything else follows. I don't think there's any doubt. The wheels are falling off Orlando Salido in that regard, because you make a great point, Gabe. When he got knocked down, he didn't look like, let's say, Augie Sanchez back in the day, or Amir Khan, where he was completely short-circuited from his faculties. In fact, one knockdown, he had this look like, what the hell am I doing on the seat of my pants, and why am I looking up at Kokia Gym and the referee? So it's not like you're getting neurologically damaged to a degree where you say to yourself, this guy should no longer fight. But there's no doubt, again, the old boxing axiom, first it's the legs and then it's everything else. But I have to tell you, though, when he gets those hands moving and he starts doing what I call the windshield wiper attack, which is left, right, up, and down, it is fun to watch because he knows how to attack the body, create angles, and I still love that overhand right, which is one of the most deceptive punches in all of boxing. Gabe, moving on here, and we'll take your calls, folks, in about 5 minutes. 347-215-7598. Gabe, what are you hearing about the pay-per-view numbers from Mayhem? I find this to be very interesting that Kevin Nioli reported 925,000, yet ESPN Deportes later in the week reported 700,000. You know what my take is? I think the truth is somewhere in the middle.
That's what I'm guessing. I think it just kind of rolls up onto the beach at like 800, somewhere in there. I don't think it was a blockbuster. I don't think it was a total loss, but at the same time, it's hard to be super successful or call it a super success when one guy's making $32 million right off the top. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the goal is in order to figure out what is a failure and what is a success here. But from what I'm understanding, I think it's closer to the lower number than it is the higher. I think people are tripping on 925 and above.
I don't think there's any doubt that this was what you call a spin leak. I think there was an agenda. I think that this is about getting access, staying friendly, putting out a certain message. But the one lesson that I've learned in terms of pay-per-view numbers and disclosure and announcements and press releases is believe absolutely nothing. Be suspicious. Understand who's getting the info, why it's being leaked, why they're reporting it. Again, me, you, Gabe, and our listeners, we don't get a doggone dime of the pay-per-view upside or any of the proceeds. So we theoretically shouldn't care, but our job is to tell the truth. Now, I've heard numbers much lower than 925. Now, do I think it did better than 700? I'm hearing that it did, but I just find it very interesting how certain networks, namely Showtime, they love it when certain numbers are reported with no sources and no backup. But then if it doesn't fit their agenda, then all of a sudden they start looking and wanting to investigate that. Why? But again, as it relates to pay-per-view numbers, folks, don't believe anything you hear.
Well, and the thing of it is that there's no sliding scale for the truth. Like, you can't say, well, I only have one source for this story, but it's only pay-per-view numbers, so I'm going to kind of break the rule and not really verify it. When you watch all those guys tweet, in this day and age, you can really watch a pattern of what somebody's trying to do. And like you said, it felt like an industry tip for somebody that promises probably more access in the future. It probably looked like somebody that was hoping that number would make them look good, because you had a bunch of top guys, the highest paid writers in our business, all tweet basically a one-source leak that these were the numbers. Whatever happened to checking with other sources? Because you and I are getting very different numbers from 925. It just seems very strange. I mean, I expect the Showtime guys, Steven Espinoza and executives, to always kind of skew things in their favor. They're in a sense promoters, and promoters by nature are kind of liars. They're always trying to make their product seem a little bit better than it actually is so that you'll pay for it. I get that, but the reporter's job is actually cut through all that by a series of rules, by looking for two or three sources to back up what the first one said. That didn't happen here.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, our new start time. We're here from 4 p.m. Pacific to 5:30. Quite frankly, we know our role. Yes, Monday Night Football is on tonight right around 5:30. So if you want to call in, again, the number, 347-215-7598. Later on in the show, some news and notes. But, Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
In the 818, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Steve, Gabe, how
you
guys doing?
Good. Who is this?
It's Jose. How you guys doing?
Jose, good Monday to you.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about a couple of things, actually. You know, first of all, I've been trolling Showtime and HBO on Twitter a couple of days ago. Just, you know, how is it being sports is able to kick their ass week after week with, you know, these solid cards for not a lot of money yet? You know, we're forced to watch the Al Heyman and Bob Arum crap.
Jose, what I find interesting, and this is an indictment on both networks. Now, every once in a while, you'll have that anomaly where a fight's on a smaller network or overseas that's like this unbelievable fight. I remember back in 2004, 5, or 6, Amir Amanshapur was in this death battle, which ended up winning Fight of the Year. Fine, I understand that. But when you're HBO and Showtime and you're spending exorbitant amounts of money – and be in sports, which has a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of that fraction of a license fee, can have a consistent roster of good, solid prize fights, because just 4 or 5 weeks ago, they had that strawweight fight, which was incredible. It goes to show you that as a network, Gabe, perhaps the focus should be more on the actual fights than individual fighters, or beyond that, agendas.
There's no question. I mean, I think you used to say, like, you know, they wanted guys that looked good on the poster. Chad Dawson looked good on the poster.
Yeah.
But what was the substance? What were we really getting? And I think particularly in the Heyman era where you're seeing him get a lot of favor on both networks, you saw fighters that got microwaved, and the product has gotten kind of diluted. And even adding to that problem with when you have, you know, Top Rank and you have the Golden Boy or Heyman, that whole mess, all these guys not fighting each other, the whole sport gets diluted. So for somebody looking from the outside, though, they're looking at these guys saying, okay, they only handle, like, the middle glamour divisions from, like, you know, 135 to, you know, on up. There's really no heavyweights, but everybody's dealing with that. And they ignore the really the hardcore fan who loves those smaller weights, has no problem watching little guys beat each other up, and there's more action fights. So if you're looking to get into the business, the smart person who really can observe the market, they look at those fights, and you look at all the fights that BN has done. Those were can't-miss fights on paper, and they absolutely delivered when they were seen. So I think, you know, it's kind of amazing to me that the HBO and Showtime have gotten to the position they are, but I think it's because there's so much money involved, and with the little guys, there isn't as much. You can kind of cut to the quick, and nobody really argues when you make these fights and want to put them on TV. But
well, speaking of which,
I don't know how they get out of this problem.
Speaking of which, Jose, how excited are you with the addition of Chad Dawson versus Tommy Carpency on October 4th on a special edition of Showbox?
Let's just say that makes me want to cancel my Showtime subscription.
That card right there, gentlemen, I'm hearing it's going to be a quadruple header. Listen, Willie Nelson, Vonis Martirosyan is not a bad fight. That might actually be pretty good, but that's something to me that should be a really good addition of Friday Night Fights if you're going to put it as a main event. Rancis Bartholomew, I could live or die without him. Chad Dawson getting what is basically a pretty solid club fighter. Again, what is the similarity between the three A-sides, soon to be fourth? They're all represented by Al Heyman.
Why doesn't he like good fights?
It's a good question. Easy, because he gets paid for the bad ones, Gabe. That's why.
I guess so. I just, you know, he doesn't get paid for the good ones? That's what I don't understand. Why does he think that we'll like this? And why aren't more people kind of dropping their subscription to Showtime? This is bad. Remember when Showtime was the network that put on that little fight that ended up being a fight of the year, like a Castillo Corrales? It was kind of a little bit of an off-brand. It wasn't the biggest deal in the world, but it's, you know, it didn't even do that well of a live gate. But it's an instant classic. I don't understand why they've shifted away from that. They try to be like the big boys and spend money like the big boys, but they're giving us crap. I don't understand how Espinosa's going to keep his job.
Well, we know why. Because Al Heyman essentially is the de facto president now of that network. I mean, I don't have the raw numbers in front of me, but Carlos Acevedo, the fine scribe for UCN Live, one of my personal favorites, had this statistic a couple of columns ago. Out of the, like, 28 or 29 fights on Showtime Championship Boxing this year, Gabe, I think 27 or 28 of the A-sides that won were with Al Haymon. You see a pattern there?
And you're seeing all the A-sides winning. Why is that fun? I like watching football still. Out of all the sports, you know, I've kind of like started following less as I've been a reporter. But I like watching football because crazy things still can happen. It's getting less and less like that in boxing, it seems like. At least wherever Al Haymon is.
Jose, are you coming close to canceling your Showtime subscription like you just stated?
You know what? I've thought about it. I mean, especially with HBO and Showtime, you know, with having these lulls in activity. As somebody like myself, who that's primarily why I subscribe to those networks, I mean, it's pointless now.
Interesting.
Especially
okay,
when
Jose.
Anyway.
Listen, we got to get going, okay?
Sounds good, man.
Thanks so much.
Gabe, before we hit the phone lines, here's a tweet from Andrew Chappell. Steve, heard rumors that HBO is interested in a Roman Gonzalez JF Estrada 2. How about as a co-feature for Canelo Cotto if that happens in Las Vegas? Well, first of all, I don't think that's realistic for that to be on the undercard. The other issue I'm hearing about Gonzalez Estrada, I heard from a good source, Roman Gonzalez now is asking for, like, ridiculous money for a junior flyweight. I'm talking in upwards right in the neighborhood of $1 million. So if that fight can't get made because of those demands, I don't blame the network. But Gonzalez Estrada, now correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe, back when Lou DiBello still had a conscience and was running HBO's boxing division, wasn't Boxing After Dark specifically created for the smaller weight classes and fights just like this?
Yeah, it was kind of doing what BN was doing in that they were bringing in, you know, here's something that you're going to love, but you may not realize it until you see it. That's what it was about. It was about bringing, you know, taking those guys, almost like, you know, Boxing After Dark was in a sense. But I think the guys were a little more experienced. And bringing these kind of fights that the hardcore fan would stay up late for and would get their friends to watch. Like, oh, you got to see this guy. It's kind of a rarity that he's on TV. I don't know what both those shows, Showbox and Boxing After Dark, just seem completely off mission. They now just seem like, oh, well, we've got this other date, and we'll just call it that. But who's really driving a boat, you know? I mean, HBO seems
you know,
a little bit better, with the exception of the Andre Ward stuff.
The period where Boxing After Dark lost its identity and its mission statement was in the very early stages of Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis, where Boxing After Dark was not about introducing Marco Antonio Barrera, Kevin Kelly, Junior Jones, featuring Johnny Tapia. It was about fighters who would lose on HBO's championship boxing platform or Fernando Vargas on pay-per-view, and they would essentially be rehabbed on Boxing After Dark in basic, I don't say appearance fights, but really relatively safe rehabilitation performances, and I dubbed it Betty Ford After Dark. And I don't think it's ever really regained that magic and the momentum from about 1996 to about 2001. Here's a tweet from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. What's going on at Showtime? How can the higher-ups let such bad quality pass? Is the ship rudderless over there? Gabe?
Well, I mean, they let Dexter go on a couple extra seasons too long, too.
Whoa.
I'm not sure. It was just god-awful at the end there. I think, on some level with business, you know, you've got to kind of let things play out. And you do have to spend money to make money. And if there's a group of people that is, you know, fight fans are very impatient. They want things now. They don't like marinating things. They want guys to be ready immediately. And so I get that this all has to form at some point and kind of, you know, gel over a couple, you know, to maybe like a 5-year plan. But at the same time, it's like I don't understand what you're trying to build with fights like this or that Garcia Peterson card that was like, you know, like the Winchester House, the Stairway to Nowhere. It's hard to think that if they keep going in this direction with no returns, it's either A, boxing really just doesn't hurt their bottom line at all, so it doesn't really matter, and people kind of tend to tune in anyways, or you know, this plan is playing out, and it's playing out horribly. And Espinoza gets clipped in like less than a year, and they.
You know, I don't
think
that. I don't believe that happens. I think Espinoza is there for the time being and will be for at least another year or two. I don't believe his job's in jeopardy for various reasons. But in defense of Showtime, Ray Donovan is having a hell of a second season. I'm just letting you know, Gabe, in all fairness here. Here's a tweet from Adrian Rakowski. The event of the evening of Salco Garcia was the worst in a decade with a question mark. Gabe, I think in terms of a triple header, that across the board was what I dubbed assault and battery. I don't think there's any doubt that was a low mark in Showtime's boxing franchise. And you want to add insult to injury? The rationale for that card August 9th at the Barclays Center was, well, Danny Garcia and Lamont Peterson are building towards a showdown as if somehow that fight was some super fight that needed a prelude. Gabe, guess what? And I think me and you have kind of known this for about 3 weeks, Garcia Peterson, excuse my English, it ain't happening.
It's I don't understand. So it's just, you know, prelude to nothing. It's very strange, and it's stuff like that I go, well, what were the higher ups told? Like, dude, you know, we're going to approve this bout, but this horrible card, but it's going to lead somewhere, right? Yeah, totally. We just don't want to jeopardize it. That's why Garcia is fighting a soft touch, and it's all good. And then it doesn't happen. Like, who answers for that? And how bad is the impact? What damage was really done? So one of the things, you know, and I'm bummed that the lawsuit ended up getting dropped. But then in the main events thing was talking about the idea, you know, the Heyman Golden Boy and all, that whole lawsuit was that Al was kind of offsetting some of these exorbitant fees. And I want to know more about that. I'm very curious to see, you know. Can you do that? Is that legal? And if it is, you know, I just don't understand. Like, somebody's kind of subsidizing a network overpaying for fights. It just seems absolutely insane to me.
Here's a final tweet before you go back to the phone lines from Jorge Casillas. The best fights have been on Be In Sports. Is that a reflection of boxing in the U.S., a channel that is difficult to find in Spanish? I think Jorge hits upon a very interesting point. I think Be In, number one, understands the market, and they're doing a great job of doing Billy Bean. In other words, they're doing a great job doing Moneyball. They're getting dollar for dollar as good a fight as anyone in the sport, but Gabe, there's no doubt about it. I think it's an indictment on the power brokers in the sport at the highest levels in America.
Yeah, I mean, you know, HBO was trying to move towards something. I thought they had something going. They had a lot of sluggers featured on their network. You know, and then Stevenson and Kovalev didn't happen. They were kind of heading somewhere. But, again, you've got this one faction who's trying to sign all the fighters, bring everything to one network, bring everything under one umbrella. It's hard for everybody to thrive when you've got one guy kind of gumming up the works. And you and I talked about this the other day, and it's something that Kathy Duva talked about when the lawsuit was launched, was that, you know, people have tried to take over the sport, but it never really happens. But while it happens, it's going to screw up the rest of the sport because people are trying to get business done. They're trying to lead somewhere, and it's hard. It's like trying to invest money in prospects. I remember somebody telling me that a few years back, that it's the climate has become such that you don't really want to spend a lot of money developing a guy, because when he gets to 15-0 and moves up in rankings, or 20-0 and gets in the top 10, he bolts somewhere else. Somebody just comes in and overspends for him and completely kills your entire investment. That's kind of what's happening here with the networks. It's hard to build for the future when you have somebody constantly undercutting you.
347-215-7598. This is the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe, let's get back to the calls.
760, you're live on the next round. 760.
Hey, what up, guys? It's Julio.
Good, what's going on?
Hey, two questions for you. Is the Con Lopez still most likely the next fight for Con in your opinion?
I've been told about a month and a half ago that Al Heyman is strongly suggesting to everyone involved that should be the fight. And the week of Jose Lopez's fight, before Mayhem on that Thursday. There was a lot of reports that that's going to be the fight. It seems to make sense because, quite frankly, Jose Lopez looks like a very faded guy in his last couple of appearances. And let's face it, if Amir Khan is going to face Mayweather sometime next year, he's not going to take a big risk. He simply isn't.
And I think you know, Jose's at that place too, where it's he's not looking. Every fight's going to be a hard uphill battle, and having to deal with Khan's speed, I think it's a great fight for him. Because I mean, if Khan isn't ready, and Khan isn't really a 47, I mean, granted, Josecito's more of a 140, but he's a guy that's going to be there, and he's going to dig into you. And if you've got weakness, he's going to find it. I think it's a nice fight. I have no problem with it. It's a safe fight too.
And
second question.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I kind of get the feeling like everybody thinks Canelo Cotto May 5th is just set in stone, and I have a feeling it's not that simple. Do you get the feeling that it's going to be a little bit more hurdles to make that fight on that date that's that easy?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's not set in stone. In fact, Gabe, they got to decide when and where and which network Canelo's going to fight on December 6th. Now, if I had $2 to bet, do I think he's going to fight December 6th in San Antonio against Joshua Clade on HBO? Yes. However, last I checked, and I'm looking at my inbox right now, I don't see any press release stating as such. So before we get to point B, we got to figure out point A. And you're right. And let me just talk about the other specter here. Everyone says, is Mayweather going to have a pay-per-view conflict with Canelo Cotto? From my experience and what I know about that particular aspect of the industry, I don't think, Gabe, there's any way the cable industry allows that to happen.
Yeah, it's just you're just leaving so much on the table. I just don't see how it happens. It's too big of an event. You could do big events, you know, in the city at the same time as, you know, Chavez Martinez and Canelo did, but not two super fights like this. It just doesn't make any business sense for anybody. It splits the pie completely in half.
But you know what? If that conflict happened, the term Mexican standoff would really apply here, because somehow Floyd Mayweather, who last I checked is not Mexican, has kind of like taken some sort of monopoly over the Cinco de Mayo date and the third or second weekend of September, the Mexican Independence Day. Canelo Alvarez, who's a headstrong, young, precocious kid, has stated those dates in the future are going to be mine. So I think that is fascinating how this plays out with all the various relationships that are going on within the Cold War.
Actually, Cotto or Canelo Clady is kind of a weird fight. I mean, I was actually kind of threw it out there. You know, I thought that would be the fight that happened, and it looks like it's going to. But, you know, Clady gets kind of, I think, dissed a little bit more than he should for the Pacquiao fight. I mean, definitely should be dissed for the Pacquiao fight, but that's not his whole career. He's not always been a boring guy. He was just awful in that fight. I think it's a good fight, but is it what Canelo needs? Does he need another 12-round battle with a guy he's probably not going to be able to knock out? Or, you know, and at junior middleweight or some weird catch weight? Or does he need somebody that he can knock out and excite the public with?
I'll say this. One thing about Clady, no matter what you want to say about him, he's durable. And based on the track record,
yeah,
I don't see Canelo Alvarez scoring any type of stoppage short of a clash of heads or a bad cut, which is a kind of a freak occurrence. I think that is a 12-round fight. Is there anything else we could do for you?
Well, it kind of goes into – I didn't, but this kind of question popped up.
Mm-hmm.
Khan and I believe Broner, they're obviously going to fight on Showtime, right? And their next fight is due on December 6th, and so is Canelo's. So them all being with the Golden Boy side, do you still think Canelo would fight on HBO if all those guys are supposed to fight on that day too?
You know, I'd be lying to you if I even gave you any speculation. I think those are things that are going to be figured out by one Oscar De La Hoya, Al Heyman, Steven Espinoza, and Ken Hirschman. So, in other words, stay tuned.
Right. All right, man.
But keep listening in, because if I hear anything, I'll be breaking it right here, live, on the next round, on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. Here's a tweet from Tyler Crute. Is there any news on Carl Froch fighting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. next year? And if not, will we see Froch versus Golovkin? Gabe, Eddie Hearn has been very honest. Right now, Golovkin, risk versus reward, that equation simply does not fall in his favor, although that could be changing after October 18th. That fight at the StubHub Center, Gabe, not only are all the tickets sold out, standing room only tickets are sold out. So I think that the economic clout and the market value of Golovkin is now significantly raised. All he has to do now is take care of business. But the guy I want to talk about is Julio Cesar Chavez. Gabe, I think he's going to be on ice for a very, very long time.
Seriously, I think, yeah, the answer to when this next fight is going to be, you know, him kind of just asking one of his guys, hey, is the pizza here yet? I think that's about it, you know. he's just chilling. And, you know, he probably has made some good money, so he probably can relax. But what a weird year to have, you know, an Andre Ward take himself off the you know, drawing board or off the chalkboard. Cesar Chavez and Mikey Garcia. Three of the guys that, again, it's hard to build for the future when stuff like this happens.
You take a look at those three, total their fights together in 2014. If Golovkin's father does not unexpectedly pass away in February, Gennady Golovkin would have more fights than that trio combined. I think that is very telling on both sides. 3-4-7-2-1-5-7-5-9-8. Yeah, Gabe.
Well, you just look at it from a business wise. When you fight often, you can sell out the StubHub Center like that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's his first time there, coming to the West Coast. Everybody wants to see him because he's always there. These other guys, I mean, Andre Ward wonders, you know, he wants fights and he wants respect and all this stuff. Fight and be exciting and great things will happen. But you do the opposite of that and, well, nobody's missing you.
Out of sight, out of mind. And the other catchphrase, which I think really encapsulates where boxing should be going, next man up. Gabe, let's get back to the calls.
In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
Hi, guys. This is Javier. How are you doing?
Well, of course it's Javier. You don't think we recognize that voice, Javier? Come on.
How you doing, guys? Guys, considering that Vin is showing Gonzalez, Johnny Gonzalez, Jorge Arce on October 4th, how many people are going to see the showbox card? I'm not seeing Gonzalez because I'm traveling to the Telefutura card to see Verdejo, who is the next young Puerto Rican superstar. But I imagine that a lot of people will be tuning into the fight that people really care about and not the crap that Showbox is putting up that day.
Well, Javier, let's be honest. We're in the business. We cover it. It's part of our job. But as a fan, this is what my day is going to be. I'm going to wake up nice and early. I'm going to watch College Game Day. Then I'm going to go comatose drinking a lot of vodka, watching college football throughout the day. They just announced that Miami, Georgia Tech will be a 7:30 Eastern game. And then from that point on, I'll have decisions. But in terms of boxing, as I guzzle more Grey Goose, it will be BN Sports. Then it'll be Felix the Future, Verdejo on Unimas. And then maybe late at night, as I'm hungover and need to recover, then I'll probably have a DVR copy ready to watch of Showbox.
Yeah, I agree. It should be in that order. I'm traveling to the Verdejo fight, but if I was staying home, believe me, I would be watching the Johnny Gonzalez fight. I'm actually considering canceling. You guys know me, but I'm actually considering canceling my Showtime subscription. I'm paying like $160 from cable, and they're not showing me what I want to see. It's really weird.
Javier, Gabe, let me ask you this. What would you rather have? And again, I'm asking if you'd rather have gonorrhea or syphilis. I realize that. But would you rather have HBO, which is taking this 10-week hiatus from the middle of August till the middle of October, which is unprecedented for this time period of the season, or would you rather have what's going on at Showtime, where they are absolutely sacrificing quality to put on shows during this stretch? Which do you guys prefer?
To be honest with you, at least there are two fights on HBO that I'm looking forward to, that they have the fight set already. That's Kovalev and Hopkins and Donner, and Donner versus Walters on October 18. But what does Showtime have left for the rest of the year? You look at the schedule and nothing is set yet. So you really don't know what they are going to show. And Peterson Garcia, which wasn't a great fight, but at least was something to look forward, is not happening. So what are they showing the rest of the year?
That's a great question. Gabe, do you have any idea what the Showtime schedule looks like outside of October 1st and November 4th? I really don't. I mean, I'm wondering what is happening to Keith Thurman. I think this is an absolute, I don't want to say crime, but I think it's a shame. Here's a bright young guy with a lot of passion who, in many respects, his mentality, Gabe, is like the antithesis of many other Heyman clients. I don't know if he's being punished, but I know one thing. His career seems to be stagnating. He should be out there 3-4 times a year, and that simply is not happening.
Yeah, it's a great mystery of this year. Completely missing. It's like you got three guys over on HBO that, well, that's where your missing dates are and you're missing fights because they're refusing to fight. But here's a guy that's willing to fight anybody, who's capable of being exciting every time. And they're not fighting him. When people tell me that Al Heyman's great for the fighters and great for the game, tell it to Keith Thurman.
Two more quick things. First of all, guys, have you heard anything? I keep hearing that Gabe Rosado may fight Ben Skirland in the undercard of Hopkins. Do you know anything about that? And the second question I wanted to ask, if there is a conflict with Mayweather and Mayweather does decide to fight on May 5th, if Cotto Canelo does happen and Mayweather fights on May 5th, doesn't that fight belong somewhere else, maybe in New York where you can put it in a stadium and do like a 70,000 people if you put it in Giant Stadium or something like that? It doesn't necessarily have to be in the MGM Grand.
I think before we even speculate on that, let's make sure that Canelo is actually going to be on HBO. And I believe one of the reasons why Canelo prefers to be on HBO, as I've been told by very good sources, he does not want to just play second fiddle to Mayweather as it relates to these specific dates. But I think those things need to be worked on. As I said earlier, let's figure out where he lands in terms of a network on December 6th.
And what about Rosado Kirtan? Have you guys heard that? And do you know where that's going?
As I understand it, the fight's a done deal, as I understood it, and that's the code feature. Rosado was the one that announced it. I haven't heard from Kirkland's people, but Kirkland has been harder and harder to get a hold of in this last year. For his own people, too, he's kind of a master of disappearing. But from what I understand, the fight's a go.
Gabe, do you know if he's going to be training with Ann Wolf? Because I think more than any other fighter, he is dependent on having a certain individual train him and work that corner. If he's with Ann Wolf, I'm picking him to win. If he isn't, I'm not so sure.
I'm supposed to talk to her in the next couple of days. I'll give you more of an update then. I'm not sure. I usually go to him straight, then I go to her, and I haven't heard anything back. So I'll let you know. I'll have an update, hopefully maybe even by the end of the show. We'll see. But
okay.
Right now, and I agree with you, if he's not with Ann, he's in trouble.
Javier, we got to get going, okay?
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. WEPA. Anyway, 347-215-7598 if you want to join us. Here's a tweet from The Butcher. 37, Butch Romero. Next round question. Why is Nicholas Walters being favored over Donaire?
Why wouldn't he be? I think I just don't think that Nonito – you know, I mean, his last fight I thought he looked better. He looks in better shape. But, I mean, he just, to me, he doesn't seem like a full-time, not really that great.
I mean,
but,
honestly, I thought Robert Garcia did a great job of giving him a like vote, or, I mean, just basically rescuing him. I mean, that fight was going to heat up. He scored an early knockdown, and then they basically fudged the rules again. One factor that really favors Nicholas Walters is physically, I think he is a natural, big bone, strong featherweight. I look at his body, Nonito Donaire's, and again, this is not bodybuilding. It screams junior featherweight or bantamweight to me. I think early on, Donaire, like his nickname, he's going to flash, going to be quick, going to be striking with that left hook. But as we start to make this into a marathon and into a really fast jog where it's a real professional prize fight in the middle rounds, I don't know. Can he hold off Nicholas Walters, who I think is a very talented, strong, rugged guy? Here's a question from Tyler Crute. What are the odds of Keith Thurman fighting Kell Brook in England? In one word, as they say in New York, forget about it. There is no real pattern, Gabe, of Al Haymon taking his guys on the road in 50-50 fights. And in fact, Al Haymon doesn't want 50-50 fights in America if he can help it. So I think there's absolutely no chance of that happening.
None whatsoever. And I'm probably going to go Walters by late TKO. I got to tell you, I agree with everything you're saying. In terms of, he's a big guy. He's 5'7", long reach. Physical guy, he's more natural to the weight class. He probably could, although he's 28, so maybe he's probably going to live at feather, maybe move up a little bit. It's kind of physically who he is. I do wonder when a guy's got that kind of record, 24-0, 20 knockouts, and he doesn't have a lot of stuff stateside. But all that said, I just think he's really quality, and I think it's just going to be a problem. I wonder if Nonito is a full-time guy. He really knows how to hunker down for like 8 to 12 weeks in a training camp and single-minded focus, you know, get himself in shape and really ready for what he needs to do. I don't think that's happening.
347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 954, you are live on the next round. 954.
Hey, guys. Sean from Gainesville.
Sean!
What's up, man?
How you guys doing?
Doing well.
I'm good. It's been a while. So, hey, I listened to last week's show, and I certainly don't want to rehash it, but, man, how much did Kenny Bayless take for that fight, you know? Guys, this is the third fight in a row that I went Floyd by decision, and I got it at 200, at minus 200. I think it's the biggest lock in all sports, you know what I mean? I only wish he fought every weekend so I could bounce back from Tom Brady killing me yesterday. So, anyway.
There's no doubt.
Oh, go ahead.
Kenny Bayless, again, I have an enormous amount of respect for his past work. When I look at this performance and what everyone is saying, I feel bad for him in one sense that, Kenny, whatever you did, if it was an agenda or whatever it was, was it worth it? And I thought Kenny Bayless, I'm not saying he was perfect, but I thought he had almost an impeccable reputation. Now, every single time that he referees a certain fight, and let's say Mayweather Promotions is involved, we really got to have a magnifying glass on him, and especially the judge, Robert Hoyle, the way he judged Bay Vasquez.
You really have to look at these fights. You know, I mean, it's. I think one of the biggest problems, you know, and there's so many in boxing. And it's politics and people not dealing with each other well and fights not getting made. But the firewall that doesn't exist between the promoters and the people that work on the fights, the judges, the refs. I don't think the promoters should have any say who refs their fights. I don't think they should have any say whatsoever on who judges their fights. I think that needs to be taken out of their hands. I don't even know if it should be in the hands of the sanctioning bodies. I think it should be up to the state commissions, although even there you start to get into politics. It's a hard, hard thing. And also, you know, not everybody – there's not that many top-level referees in the sport. There's good ones in every region, I'm sure, but at those top-level fights, you want guys like Kenny Bayless who've got a lot of fights under their belt. But, yeah, if he was a band, you know, I'd have to say I preferred his early work compared to last Saturday.
Sean.
What's up, Sean?
I'm curious to know this. As someone who has paid the prices for pay-per-view, but also as more and more, quote-unquote, listen to the radio, what did you do on the night of September 13th?
I was actually working, so I didn't watch it live.
Oh, okay. So you also missed the Florida Gators' thrilling triple overtime victory over the Kentucky Wildcats. That's what you're telling me, right?
Yeah, I missed okay. that, but I wish I would have missed this last weekend's game. So,
Sean, is there anything else we can do for you?
You know, guys, what's going on with Floyd? Why does he out his own people in the media? I saw he was outing Leonard Ellerbe, and I don't know. What's going on with that? You know,
well, hold on. Let's talk about this game. I don't think he outed Leonard Ellerbe. I think it's clear that Leonard Ellerbe is just out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure he didn't say he was gay, but he – he did say, yeah, he's moving on. He will no longer be massaging me in the corner. It was kind of strange, and it was weird that he brought up, you know, that he wasn't in the corner, and he just kind of, we've grown apart. It did sound like a little bit like they were breaking up. But, you know, I wonder, you know, the thing is that you look at that rag that published the interview, and for me, the question is this just Floyd ranting and the guy's happy to get exclusive stuff and he just puts it out there and it's kind of all juicy? Or is it real and Floyd saying, look, I want to get this out there. I want to put people in check and freak them out and put them in line and so put this out? Or is it real and it's a real story? It's hard to tell because I just don't trust the source. The mouthpiece is dirty, in my opinion. So I'm curious to see what going forward. Speaking of dirty, yeah. though, he also reads is saying he's got a 2-year contract with Floyd Mayweather. I find that to be very interesting. Are they going to do year-round testing now that he's in there? Because it seems to me the Pacquiao's team, of course not. And just the great hypocrisy. I think, really, this last move, hiring the guy that you might have been even worried about during the negotiations for Pacquiao and Mayweather, and, you know, they didn't do the drug testing, but that was like the reason, was his team, right? Now you hired that guy. I think it's pretty obvious that Floyd never wanted that fight because the style was all wrong. Nothing more, nothing less.
And Gabe, I'm just waiting for Floyd Mayweather Sr. to accuse his own son of being on A-side meth.
Wow.
Yeah, I went there. Yeah, I said it.
He does stay up late at night. I don't know.
Hey, guys, I'll end with this. What made you feel worse about being a boxing fan? The All Access episode where Floyd and his girls are rolling and smoking joints? Or Leonard Ellerbe saying in the media before a Floyd fight that, quote, Floyd's going for the knockout?
Well, anyone that believed that should have swampland in Florida that they should buy for development of condominiums. I tell you what was disturbing about the All Access, guys. Well, not even the smoking of the marijuana. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not so sure why the Nevada Commission is making a big deal about that. The bottom line is you have drug tests. If he passes them, all bets are off. And from what I've known, I think he's passed those tests, at least in terms of marijuana. But what I found offensive and hypocritical from Floyd's standpoint, here's a guy who says it's all about safety. We can't make boxing too dangerous. Okay, fine. But when you have sparring sessions where you have 30-minute rounds plus, and it's all about basically fight till someone gets knocked down or knocked out or quits, and they're not exactly doing weight classes, you have young kids going up against grown men. Floyd, you say the doghouse is what boxing's all about. The bottom line is you would never participate in yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, there's a concern that there was gambling going on with the sparring sessions. And this gets into another gray area. I mean, it's kind of not legal unless it's sanctioned and looked over. And but, again, this is another thing, too, that, you know, they're lucky that All Access was dumb enough to show this, or the producers of the show, I think Floyd's one of them, were dumb enough to show this and that nobody would do anything. Although, you know, boxing is a culture of no one doing anything. But I remember when I was down living in L.A., and I would talk to remember they were doing the whole spar. There was a new rule for you had to be registered to spar, and you had to have your sparring license out. There's not enough people in the state commissions, not enough inspectors, and they don't pay them enough to go around and check all the gyms and, like, be there. But you would think that, you know, with all the sparring that goes on, like a wild card, there's tons of sparring goes on there, that they would find a way to cover that. Maybe this,
you know,
this shows that they're shedding a good light on this subject.
But, Gabe, you know, I don't care if guys want to, like, gamble on it. I really don't care. If you're stupid enough to make this into human cockfights from a betting perspective, go ahead. But it's entirely different when you're saying, let's go 30-minute rounds without rest. And there's that one scene where Floyd is mocking that guy that got knocked down. I'm just like, Floyd, I thought you were all about safety. And, you know, that's the last thing you want as a gym, is to have someone die or get really hurt bad. That's where I'm just like, Floyd, you're really sending some mixed messages here. Sean, we got to run, okay? I guess he already ran. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. Let's get to a 347 number. Mike at FightFan718. He's been patiently waiting for us.
Hello?
There you are on 347.
Mike, what's going on?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good.
I don't know if you guys, what do you guys think about Ellie Sekpak, but he actually posted a good video about 2 days ago, and it was of Bermain Stiverne and Deontay Wilder in the same building. So I think they were at the Josecito Lopez fight. And Ellie's interviewing Stiverne and Deontay, and then Stiverne says something real interesting. He says, oh, I'm not scared of him. They're scared of me. Actually, Al's scared. He says, Deontay's people are scared of Jay-Z. That's who they're really scared of. I just wanted to know if you guys heard any more about the purse bid and Jay-Z and Al Heyman, if they could actually come together and make that fight.
It's hard to say. To me, I'm not connected with Jay-Z's people, you know. It's hard for me to say what their real plan is. I mean, that they were willing to spend that much money on the Quillen fight kind of throws me. But I haven't heard any developments on in terms of this other fight. I still say if I'm Wilder's people, I'm just wanting to get him out there fighting more often. It seems like they've built a record. I'm still not convinced that they've built a fighter. So if anybody's afraid of anybody, I think it would be the people around Wilder of that fight, of building up to this record, getting where they've gotten to, and then just cashing him out. I just don't see it as of that even of a fight.
The recent track record, based on what happened with Quillen Khorabov, is that when a sanctioning body forces Al Heyman into a real fight, he's going to tell that guy, not happening. Now, the rumor that's going around boxing right now is that Peter Quillen was paid a pretty good sum of money by Mr. Heyman to abdicate the WBO with the promise of a very hefty payday on the back end when he does fight, no matter who it's against. That rumor's been out there for about a week or two. Now, going back to Wilder Stiverne, guys, don't you have a sneaking suspicion that happened?
It doesn't look like it. I mean, how long is it going to take to do a purse bid, you know? I hope I want to see it, but it just seems as day goes by, it's not coming together, you know?
I'd be really surprised if that fight happens. I really would.
What happens after? I mean, who's Deontay Wilder going to fight? I mean, what heavyweight are they going to pluck out? You know, who's Al Heyman manage where that he could fight him? You know what I mean?
You know, this, guys. According to the WBC rules, from what I'm told by someone who's studied this rule book, if you are in that position and you basically give up the title shot, you lose your ranking. So that's interesting that right now it's not network executives, it's not anyone else, but it is the sanctioning bodies, God bless them, that are actually making Al Heyman guys fight. So you know what? Hail, hail, hear, hear to the WBC, IBF, WBO, and I can't forget the WBA.
Yeah.
It kind of goes back to that axiom that you told me a long time ago, Steve. You don't change the game changes you. And you look
absolutely.
At Al, he's trying to take it over, but there's a lot of things in place to overcome in this sport. I know that pretty well myself.
Mike, is there anything else we could do for you?
Yeah, I just got one question. I like Floyd sometimes, but how can the guy who's talking about he's the safe athlete, he's 100% drug free, hires the guy who had an athlete last year fail a drug test and hire him for a 2-year contract? How is that? How are people not jumping all over Floyd for that?
I think certain people are, but I think this has become so farcical that anyone that actually says that Floyd Mayweather, he's this pioneer in anti-doping, he's just trying to do the right thing. You know, go and put your TMT hat and T-shirt off in a corner and get the hell away from the rest of society, okay?
No, I remember, Gabe, when you when Golden Boy, with that article you read about the against Super stuff, has Floyd acted more guilty since then? He's been so, like, his actions have just been looking like, yeah, he looks like a guilty person, you know what I mean?
You notice they don't release results anymore, USADA. I never see them. Remember the Mosley, the first couple fights, they released the results. They don't do that anymore, which I think is kind of strange. You don't really see anybody covering it as much either, or asking about it, and you don't see it as a focal point anymore. They were stuck with the storyline for a while there. I still think they do testing, but I bet you they don't do nearly the amount. Plus, there's, you know, in those contracts, which I ended up printing, there's a clause in there where the testing can be just shut off at any time for, you know, no reason. I have to grab the exact wording, but it's always been interesting to me that fail-safe was kind of in there, and that you've seen these testing results or these testing programs start and then abruptly stop, and you're given some kind of weird reason. I think the whole thing is a bit of a sham, to be perfectly honest. And I stand by that article, the correspondence that I put out there. I think, you know, some people have tried to say, oh, well, you never came through. You never came through with the release, you know, with the results. I mean, but the fact of the matter is that I printed what they told me not to print, and they never sued me, even though they said they would sue me. I firmly believe that those positives are probably still out there, and that there's,
you know,
probably some sort of explanation, but we know what's up.
Gabe, there's a reason why when it came to that defamation case between Pacquiao and Mayweather, Mayweather paid a hefty amount to keep a lot of things silent and sealed. Let's just leave it at that. Mike, we got to get running, okay?
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
And let's take one more call before we go to news and notes. Gabe, the Fightsmith at 714 got cut off earlier. He's back in the rotation. Let's try to hit him up.
Boom. Hopefully,
hey,
this
guys,
is the right
how's it
one.
Going?
Good.
What's
who
up,
is
man?
This?
How you doing?
Lenny the Fightsmith. How you doing?
Ah, good. What's welcome up? Aboard.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since I talked to you guys. I kept getting cut off the last couple of times, but I don't think I missed much. I mean, not with you guys, but boxing.
Well, not with us. No. You missed a lot
no.
with us. You missed
I did,
incredible,
I did.
Incredible radio on Blog Talk Radio. That's what you missed, okay?
I don't mean to have a ball-washing moment, but I really want to thank you guys for actually being real with the stuff you guys report and actually practicing real journalism. You guys started off kind of talking about the numbers that were getting thrown out by a bunch of the mainstream guys. With the Mayweather pay-per-view numbers, and I think you guys are really the only ones that I've heard actually look into those numbers further and actually question the validity of the 900,000 plus buys.
Yeah, I mean, my point is this: do I think guys like Kevin Ioli and Chris Mannix are credible? Yes. But do I think they got played like a fiddle by certain people? Yes, because you could say, well, those guys are credible. Guess what? So is ESPN Deportes. So, again, who do you believe? It's all a matter of your own prejudice and your opinion.
Well, I think, too, is that people kind of rushed. They got this inside call, and it was weird watching it on Twitter because you could see each one of them, an industry source. Well, obviously it's the same person. They're all tweeting within a few minutes of each other, the same story. None of them stopped and said, maybe I should call like two other people and really verify this. I've got this number. I mean, trust me, I've gotten some pretty hot leads in my time, and you've got to sit on them, and you've got to vet them before you
Gabe,
really
you know
anything.
What's funny? When the numbers are great, they come out in 4 or 5 days. and the numbers are bad. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it takes a month or so to tabulate the numbers. Okay, which is it? Does it taste great or is it less filling? Pick one. Let's go with that one. Let's be consistent across the board here.
Yeah, that's I do. I like the way you point out the kind of the hypocrisy of Showtime. They can be really – well, Stephen can be rather rude about it and kind of demeaning about it when he thinks a guy is wrong or is trying to say a guy is wrong. But, you know, they flip the coin the other way and it goes in your favor and all of a sudden nobody really says anything. Lie in my favor. Tell me how pretty I am. But, you know, the bottom line is I think all of us – you know, I don't think, like, pay-per-view numbers are the biggest story in the world, but I do think lying to the public is quite an important story. That's why I care about this.
I think the thing about pay-per-view numbers is we don't really have, for boxing fans, we don't have, like, a universal way of determining who the best is. So you're kind of forced to look at these pay-per-view – these, like, ancillary things like pay-per-view numbers to help kind of determine who the most important guy is in boxing. And with that said, though, I mean, 925,000 pay-per-view buys, even if that's a lie, even if that's puffy, that's not that much.
Well, hold on. It is a lot, but when you have to pay the two main event guys a total of $35 million, that means if you use simple mathematics, where half the money from that $75 has to go to the cable operators, you have to do approximately 1.2 to break even. And Fightsmith, you make a great point about how we judge who's the most important, who's the best in the world. You're right. Remember, this guy's nickname is Money, and a lot of his identity is about not only am I the best fighter, I'm the most popular and the richest. And Showtime can say, well, we're not really that much invested into it. You know what's funny? When that press release came out, when they got the services of Floyd Mayweather, they were more than willing to be on press releases which stated that this guy is going to get paid an awful lot of money. And I just find it funny, the one fight where we think it was really profitable – which was Canelo last year, they had no problems releasing a number. They haven't released a number for any of our other fights. Not that it's important, but we're just saying, let's have some consistency within this discussion.
Yeah, and some truth. You know, I think with the consistency will come that, you know?
Yeah, Fightsmith, before we let you go, you live in the 714 area, that's Orange County. Are you making the drive down October 18th to the StubHub Center?
I actually live on the west side. Yeah, I have front row seats for Golovkin, for the Golovkin fight. The resale value on StubHub right now is tempting me to sell them, though, and my wife isn't helping matters.
You know what they say, happy wife, happy life. Right, Gabe?
Ain't that the truth?
Fightsmith, you have a great Monday, okay?
You too, guys. Thanks.
Gabe, let's go through some news and notes here. And if you want to call in, we're here for another 22 minutes, 347-215-7598. Gabe, December 13th at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. Tim Bradley will take on Diego Chavez. Gabe, thumbs up or thumbs down on this fight?
I like this fight. I think, you know, Diego Chavez is fun. He can get some things done. I think he might have one, you know, really good win in him where you kind of figure it out and put it all together. And Bradley, you know, say what you want about him. He's not really like a knockout puncher or anything, but he's always in good fights. I'm rarely bored by a Tim Bradley fight. So I like it. I think it's a perfect fight for both of them.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think I mentioned this last week, but Ruslan Provodnikov will fight in Russia, according to his promoter, Artie Palullo. The two dates are November 29th or December 6th. Quite frankly, HBO and them couldn't come to a resolution on the money, and he wanted to be a main event and not a co-feature. Also, according to Tony Gonzalez, the number one Hurricane fan in all of boxing, Yuri Gamboa will return in Mexico on November 22nd. And this is something I want to discuss with you. Gabe, did you watch the last edition of the Fight Game with Jim Lampley on HBO?
Yes, I did.
What were your thoughts on the overall tenor and quality of that program?
You know, I like what Jim's trying to do. I think he wants to have a news show about boxing. I think he wants it to be important, to feel like it has gravity. And he's good at that. He kind of makes it feel, just in his delivery, like all this stuff is important. But I just think there's just an inherent conflict of interest. It's not like it's ESPN where it's, you know, and they have their own problems, but they're a news agency. This is HBO. It's entertainment. And so I think they've got a bit of an identity crisis. I mean, they almost want to be like, you know, those NFL Live, like those kind of shows where you're looking back at the action and breaking it down. But instead, he's trying to, like, you know, be this kind of hard-hitting journalist or hard-hitting kind of commentator, like a Keith Olbermann or something. And I'm not sure if it's fair for him to be commenting on Floyd and his domestic violence issues, but that was a little, you know, I don't know, glass
you know,
house.
yeah, or pot kettle, both black. But, yeah, you know,
not to be
regardless,
rude, there.
Yeah, you know, regardless of Jim's own past, I agreed with the overall underlying message that he had. I think most rational people would say, Jim, you're hitting on a lot of points here that we don't disagree with. But my question is, that doesn't matter to me, because that's a man's opinion. He's still allowed to have it regardless of his past, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
He served his time. The legal process took its course. My question is this. If Floyd Mayweather was still on HBO, would those words have been spoken on that network and that show? I think that's where we go back to, should HBO be given their role in some of the problems in this business, should they even be doing a show of this nature?
I just don't know. I don't think so. But if you're going to do it right, you know, and I've told Jim this myself, so I don't have a problem with it. And we've discussed, you know, what the things about the show. And even before I wrote that last piece that I did on you know, what fixing the fight game. But I think, you know, he needs real reporters. Like I recommended you. I thought, you know, or people like you. I don't think there is anybody really out there.
Well, some of them do, Gabe. Not all of them.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, someone or like you, you know, and I don't think there's many people like you.
Well, Gabe,
but,
so you're not a fan of – so again, about Michelle Beadle, here's the issue that I have, and nothing against her, but if you're going to do a boxing program that is so specific to this sport, you better be that person that watches at least ESPN Friday Night Fights on a regular basis, if not Una Mas or Telemundo. And quite frankly, I get the feeling – she doesn't.
No, and I don't think she, you know, it's like she kind of admitted even that she's like, well, I'm kind of new to this, and then why do I care what you have to say? You know, honestly, like, and you're sitting there, well, my impressions of Terrence Crawford, he's a nice guy. It's not fair to the audience when your average guy that's watching knows way more about the sport than she does. It's just not fair. They don't necessarily need to be an ex-boxer. I don't subscribe to that. But like I said, it needs to be somebody who was on the beat. Why didn't they make a move to replace Larry Merchant with someone like yourself, somebody that's actually on the beat,
well,
that goes to the gyms, that can bring that kind of feeling to the table? Why do I got to look at Max Kellerman and Michelle Beadle? I don't understand.
Gabe,
you know?
Gabe, could you imagine any other sport that has like a show like this, a magazine show for 30 minutes that's devoted strictly to a certain league or a sport, like let's say basketball, and one of the people say, you know, I don't watch a lot of basketball, but God, this Kobe Bryant – God, he's good. How long has he been in the league? They wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine being on an NFL program and saying, this Tom Brady, where did he come from? I mean, to me, it's almost a disrespect. I do understand why they're trying to shuffle the deck, trying to get a different viewpoint. But Michelle Beadle, for as talented as she is, and I like her work on other sports, if you're going to cover a sport that is specifically about that particular industry, you better be watching that sport every week. You better be setting your DVR. You better be making an effort to watch the international fight. If not, yours is not an opinion that I give a damn about.
No, if the thing is, okay, well, we need that female reporter to
says
bring
who?
In that demographic.
Says
then,
who? Yeah,
you know,
says who, though?
Yeah, we don't. But, I mean, I think for some reason all the sports think that we need a female because guys go, ooh, a woman, and they get excited. But if you needed that, Christina Poncher, I think, is somebody that's very capable. She is around the fights. She studies hard. I was watching her at the press conference, writing down her questions, really kind of like saying them out loud, trying to figure out what's the best angle I can give. She's grown a lot in her time in the sport. That's somebody I would have given a shot to. I know she, you know, she works for Top Rank. at times. I don't know if she's under exclusive contract because she works for NFL now. But it just seems – it was just really out of – I didn't really understand it. I mean, they're not even really trying to be, like, real sports. Like, if they were trying to do, like, segments and, like say, do the, something about the Andre Ward piece. I haven't seen anybody do, like, a full story where you had both sides of it and really got exclusives with each guy.
Oh, they won't.
Give me an in-depth feeling. They won't. And so
Max,
Max
Kellerman is specifically brought on, it seems, to that program to basically wave the HBO pom-poms for Andre Ward. Let's just call that for what it is. Let's get back to the phone lines. 347-215-7598. We got 15 minutes left. Gabe, let's roll through them.
Okay. In the 480, you're live on the next line.
Hey, what's up,
480? What's up,
good. What freeway are you on, by the way?
Oh, what's that?
What freeway are you driving on right now?
guys, I'm leaving the parking structure, dude. It's, like, really covered.
Okay, go ahead. Well, what's on your mind?
All right, so the last, let's say, 4 years, I'm excited about football season, but football season couldn't come fucking any sooner, man. I swear to God, man, yesterday, maybe it's because I was on the Cardinals at 3-0, the home team, but, dude, this boxing year, dude, this whole year in boxing has been fucking ugh, that I'm so excited about football. And I'm not even that much of a football fan.
You echo the sentiments of a lot of people. I thought, Gabe, tell me if I'm wrong, last year people were excited. Whether that was overblown or not, I don't know. I don't think there's any doubt. There's no real positive spin to 2014.
No, but with the exception of we're starting to see some great action at the lower weight classes and there's some really good fights, and BN Network has kind of decided to, you know, invest in it. That would be the only good spin I could really give you. Other than that, we got way too many pay-per-views, and the pay-per-views we're getting are of fights that we really didn't care about. I don't, you know, people could say whatever they want about Floyd Canelo. Going back to that fight, like, I didn't want that fight. I thought it was way too soon. I thought it was a preordained beginning or a preordained ending. And just that has become the trend. And I don't understand it. And I kind of echo Jim Lampley's sentiments. I can't wait for Floyd to retire. And I kind of can't wait for Manny Pacquiao to retire, too. Although he does take on his contemporaries. His problem is that his universe isn't filled with a lot of compelling opponents. But yeah, it's frustrating, man. You know,
it's really
my Rams looking a little bit of signs of life.
And this is, I'm saying this after, like, Salula put on, like, a nice, solid knockout. You know what I mean? Which is, I love Orlando Salula. He couldn't be on HBO. I don't know, man. I'm just, this whole, right now, it's just, I'm feeling so negative. I really am. I'm feeling very, very negative about boxing. And I just can't wait for this year to end, dude. Like, seriously.
You know, again, I would love to tell you that you are outraged for no reason. I'd love to tell you that your emotions are overblown and overwrought. I can't disagree with you. I mean, my job is to write about boxing a couple times a week. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I have no idea what the hell I'm going to talk about tomorrow for my column.
Yeah, it's kind of rough, you know. There's not a lot to – there's nothing very exciting. There's no – I mean, there's Golovkin, but, I mean, it's not like he's the greatest interview on the planet. You know, the thing I like about him is watching him fight. That's about it, you know. Maybe seeing him spar if I got a shot, you know, seeing that. But, there's no real guy to, like, point at and say, that's my guy. That's who I'm excited about. I'll tell you what, Kirkland Rosado, I'm excited about. Kirkland, it drives me nuts, you know. He should be – the sport should be more popular because he should be a bigger name. Doug Fisher talked in his call on the Monday Mailbag today about him, and that he called him a gatekeeper, and that, you know, here's a guy that he's so close to always being in the top 10, and then he always just kind of shoots himself in the foot one way or the other, or buys a gun and goes to jail. It's frustrating, but you're right. I mean, to me, all the frustrations that boxing fans are having with the year are encapsulated in my frustration with James Kirkland. We just can't seem to get on a roll this year.
All right. Well, listen, I hope you're not paying too much for parking. Please join us again, okay?
All right. Take it easy, guys.
We are on the next round. 10 more minutes on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya, Steve, K9, Kim here. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
The 305. You're live on the next round. 305.
Hey, guys. This is Derek down here in Miami. How's everything?
Derek, what's going on? We're both in mourning. We're both in mourning.
Yeah, so, you know, it seems like just the boxing world has gotten generally really dull. There's no exciting fights with the exception of Kirkland Rosado. But, I mean, the Mayweather fight, and I mean, just the whole Showtime network and their boxing network has been really lame for the past couple of years. And I don't know if it has to do with Al Heyman and his influence in the sport, or Floyd Mayweather and, you know, his influence as well, but it seems like they have kind of a vice grip on the game and they're dulling it down. And I don't know. I just wanted to get your feedback on that.
Derek, like the last caller, I'm not so sure you're saying anything that the majority would disagree with. Has the sport been Haymanized? Well, certainly one network has been, Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, I look over at HBO and Peter Nelson is a guy that I wouldn't call him an executive who doesn't like the sport. I think if he had a perfect world, he would have a lot of action fights with punchers that kind of eschew defense in order to get their work done. I think that's his, you know, that's what he likes. Over at Showtime, I have no idea what they like. I don't know if Steven Espinosa is actually a boxing fan or if he just used to be a lawyer for a top boxing company and now runs Showtime through various, I don't even know how he got the job, to be perfectly honest. I don't know what his qualifications are. He doesn't feel like being sports, to me, seems like there's somebody there that really loves boxing, and it's like, dude, I especially like the little guys. Nobody's doing it. Let's get those guys on because everybody likes that. That seems like somebody that's excited over there. Over at Showtime, it just, I don't understand what they're doing. They're just getting paid and killing fans, you know, and really dulling down the sport, diluting it, Walmarting it, if you will.
Derek, anything else we can help you with?
Yeah, I mean, I just hope one last comment. I just hope there's some type of outlet for young fighters to, you know, to get on the big stage without, you know, these promotional companies and top promoters controlling the game and not allowing them access.
Yeah, it is what it is. That's all I can tell you, Derek. Let's see where the business is a year from now. But that NBC series, which has been really good for main events in the sport of boxing in terms of bringing up good, solid B-sides and developing Sergey Kovalev, guess what? That series is being bought out by Al Heyman and a hedge fund with $50 million. So let's see what happens. Derek, we got to get running, okay?
All right, guys. Thank you.
Gabe, before we get to the next call, the NBC show, speaking of that, Tabiso Machunu, Gabe, I want to say it right now. He is about as slick a cruiserweight as you'll ever see. I think he's a very tough out for anyone at 200 pounds.
I agree. I really like him. And he's an interesting guy. You know, I'm sure they probably, you know, they mentioned it. I didn't catch it. But he's not really a southpaw. You know, he's a right-handed guy who fights out of that stance and is comfortable with it. So he's got two strong hands. And I really like his attitude. I had a chance to do an interview with him last week for Leaving in the Ring. And he was just seems like an intelligent guy, really understands who he is. And in the ring, he's nice, he's smooth. He does have aggression, I think, aggression issue, in that I think he can be outworked a little bit. You know, he has tendency to kind of just have, like, offensive lapses. But overall, I think he's really developing nice. And it's a shame, like what that caller said. NBC, that has been such a nice series, developing some quality fighters. I hope it doesn't go away. What they're doing over there, I hope it doesn't go away because Al Heyman steps into it. And again, it's really weird. You know, you look at this sport and about access and about people trying to get along. Here's a guy that doesn't give any interviews. He doesn't actually play ball at all with the media. And he's kind of screwing up the game in a big way. And he's the Boxing Writer Association of America's Manager of the Year. To me, change in this game is going to be real. It's strange, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Gabe, about the BWAA, that's not an organization that I'm a part of. Carl Dargan, here's what I'm happy on his behalf. He didn't just win. He finally did something where I said, you know what, let's see that guy again.
Yes, I've liked Carl for a long time. He just doesn't fight often enough. And I did an interview with him a couple fights back, and he talked about that they wanted to get in more fights, and it's now that time. You know, his uncle and trainer is Nazim Richardson, and I can't help but think that they just went really slow with him, like too slow. Like they're a little worried, you know, like the familial bond was too strong, and they want to risk him too much. But then you see this fight, and like, well, maybe all those lessons in the gym are finally paying off. You know, he immediately was like, you know, hands down, man down. He understood what got him put down, but he got up, and I thought he did great in the rest of the round that he got knocked down in, and then he finished just like a champ. Great fight for him. I think a lot of lessons to be learned in it. Carl Dargan's nice, man. I don't think he's chinny. I think he had a defensive lapse. He learned from it, and then he got it done exactly the way you want to. Yeah, more Carl Dargan.
Gabe, we have 5 minutes. Let's try to rip through as many calls as possible here.
You got it. 724, you're live on the next round. 724.
I'm just listening in, guys. Thanks.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
well,
no
all right.
Worries.
A couple more minutes. Thank you for listening.
787, once again, you're live on the next round.
Let's move on.
All right. I know somebody that's actually, I think he went off the line. How about in the 516?
Hey, guys, this is Evan from Pennsylvania. How are you doing today?
Evan, what's going on?
Yeah,
you got a few
you
minutes here.
All right, well, just, you know, it's a shame. Well, not a shame, but, you know, when the best fights of the year, arguably the two best fights of the year, have both been on beIN Sports Espanol, which probably about 87 people in the country get. I know I'm not one of them, and I had to wait to the next day to you know, download a stream of it or whatever. So that's
mm-hmm.
kind of a shame, but this question is for Gates because it's a PED question, and I mentioned something to you on Twitter about, you know, Salido. When I watched Salido, you know, and it was a great fight, and I enjoyed it, and I respect what he's done as a fighter, having turned pro at 15, but Gabe, can you help but not be suspicious about a guy who's almost 34, has been fighting for 18 years as a pro, and in the 11th round of a brutal fight, comes up with a flurry like that and knocks his guy out cold? I enjoy the fight immensely, but part of me, a large part of me, felt a little suspicious. And I want to know what Gabe thought about that with the PED testing in Mexico probably not being, you know, particularly stringent.
Probably didn't exist. You know, I tried to move away. People have accused me of being a witch hunter, particularly with the Marcos or the Marquez stuff and Heredia. And I've really taken a long view of all the sports, like Armstrong, Victor Conte's case, Barry Bonds. We really get into this kind of witch hunting thing. And honestly, through the many years I've worked now on this angle and behind the scenes and in front of it, I'm suspicious of everybody, to be perfectly
mm-hmm.
honest. If you're not doing a year-round testing program like VADA, which, honestly, I'm wondering if they even exist at this point. They've been squeezed out of the business by Bob Arum, by Richard Schaefer. They've been helped along by that, by media, like guys like Ioli, who really haven't fought for them as hard as they could, and Rafael. And honestly, looking at the anti-doping movement in boxing, it appears to be dead. Fred Sternberg today said that Algieri Pacquiao is being tested. I don't think VADA's doing it. Don't know if USADA's doing it. It's just being tested. Well, nobody's asking any questions about it. No media cares. No fighters are signing up to be tested. Maybe Floyd. We're not even sure about that anymore. It's kind of, you know, like, I just to answer your question again, it's just to repeat myself, I'm suspicious of everybody not doing testing.
And in a sport where people die, and every year there's, you know, a bunch of deaths, this should be the one sport
dude's
where
making weight that's unnatural every week. To me, that it starts right there. The drug use starts right there, and then it expands as you get older. That's all.
Yeah.
I like that.
Guys, listen, we got to get running, okay?
Thank you. Have a good night, guys.
All right. All right, well, listen, that was a jam-packed show. Hopefully, Gabe, within the next week or two, believe it or not, the milestone, we might be a sponsored version of the next round. Oh, what a milestone that's going to be. But anyway, on behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.